From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Former special counsel Robert Mueller testified in front of two House panels back-to-back on Wednesday, fulfilling a long-standing Democratic demand that he submit to public questioning about his investigation into Russian election interference. He opened his testimony at the House Judiciary Committee hearing by reiterating the seriousness of Russian efforts. Several Democrats forced him to reiterate what his report already says, that he did not exonerate President Donald Trump of all wrongdoing, especially in the section regarding obstruction of justice. Republicans, meanwhile, stuck largely to a line of inquiry heard nowhere else but Fox News, raising conspiracy theories and the so-called Steele dossier, or why resources were not spent on investigating Hillary Clinton instead. Mr. Mueller appeared at times overwhelmed and hesitant, and at other times defiant. He largely stuck to his pre-hearing assertion that he would not say anything beyond what he wrote in the report. My guest is Ron Fine, legal director of Free Speech for People and a constitutional lawyer. He's the co-author with John Bonifaz and Ben Clements of the book The Constitution Demands It, The Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump. Hi, Ron.
Hi.
So I'm sure you, like many other Americans on Wednesday, spent several hours watching this testimony unfold. The lead up to it, Democrats previewed it, saying they, the American public would be witness to how Trump has been, guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors. As far as you can tell, did the hearings succeed from a Democratic perspective?
Well, I think from a perspective of the United States of America and its citizens, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, the evidence of Trump's high crimes and misdemeanors has been staring us in the face for nearly his entire presidency. This hearing was focused on one part of that, which is Special Counsel Mueller's investigation. And as he kept saying, that was a narrow investigation. A lot of the questions he was asked, he just responded, that wasn't within my purview. And it's important to keep that in mind as we think about high crimes and misdemeanors, that many of the impeachable offenses that Trump has committed weren't part of the Mueller investigation. Within that investigation, though, Mueller laid out a convincing case for 10 different instances where Trump committed obstruction of justice. And although for reasons of his own interpretation of the Department of Justice policy, he was not willing to come forth and say plainly, Trump committed obstruction of justice, he laid out a roadmap for exactly that, and it is a roadmap for impeachment.
There was a lot of discussion around whether special counsel took to heart the Office of Legal Counsel's standing that or assertion that a sitting president cannot be indicted. I suppose Democrats wanted Mueller to say it more clearly in the report that the president should be indicted, but we can't recommend an indictment because the OLC doesn't allow it. He didn't say that. And so Democrats tried to get him to admit that that's why he didn't say it. But he was sort of still hesitant during these hearings, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think Mueller is a straight shooter, but he's a figure from another era. And unfortunately, his approach was maybe too clever by half, in that what he decided was that since the department policy, which is only a department policy, and it's a department policy that has only come up to protect presidents under impeachment investigations, first Nixon and then Clinton, this policy says that a sitting president can't be indicted. Mueller took it a step further and said that he wouldn't even say in a report, which is not an indictment, that Trump met the elements of those obstruction of justice charges. And he's not willing to go further. What he hoped was that this would give enough room for Congress to draw its own conclusions, but he also left room for the Attorney General Barr to make his own conclusion, which he did before America had even seen the Mueller report, and say that there was no obstruction. And that was the narrative for weeks until the Mueller report came out. And that's now what he's going uphill against. So unfortunately, I think that his intent may have been honorable, but it wasn't suited to the moment. And it would have been better if he had just come out and said, here are 10 instances where Trump committed obstruction of justice. He can't be indicted so long as he's in office, but I'm laying out the facts and the legal interpretation for Congress to draw the next steps.
I mean, you cannot be honorable in the face of somebody who fights so dirty. And so one clear instance of that was that in his hearings, Mueller was asked why he did not interview Trump directly. And Mueller said, "We were almost toward the end of our investigation and we had little success in pushing to get the interview of the president." He said, "We decided we did not want to exercise our subpoena powers because of the necessity of expediting the end of the investigation. The expectation was if we did subpoena the president, he would fight the subpoena and we would be in the midst of the investigation for a substantial period of time." In effect, he's admitted that Trump's vehement, unethical, and unrelenting resistance to being investigated won out.
That's right. And this is why obstruction of justice is such an important charge, both in the criminal law and in what we might call the law of impeachment, going back certainly to President Richard Nixon, which is that it's a way of preventing obstruction or preventing investigation of other offenses. And Trump has used this tactic fairly successfully. He refused to submit to an interview himself. He would have fought a subpoena. And, you know, in many cases, the Mueller investigation was stymied by non-cooperation and lying from witnesses. And he said that in the report. And what that means is that we put a lot of weight on this criminal investigation. We put our hopes. When I say we, I don't mean you or me, Sonali. I mean the nation to a substantial extent was misled into collectively putting its hopes on the Mueller investigation to unearth everything as if this would be the key, because it was deemed politically inconvenient to talk about whether Trump's other offenses, some of which were right out in the open, like taking emoluments from foreign governments, like abusing the pardon power, like abusing emergency powers to fund a border wall with Mexico that Congress refused to fund. But the Congress wanted to set that because it would have been politically difficult or challenging or require some courage, and instead put all of their hopes in Mueller. And unfortunately, Mueller, like any prosecutor, has his limitations. And Trump was very successful in using the powers of his office and the immunities of his office to prevent Mueller from being able to reach the conclusions that really ought to have been reached.
Just to go to the issue of the Russian interference issue for a bit, that was one thread that Mueller seemed quite interested in pursuing. He opened his testimony saying that this is a very serious problem, that Americans are essentially underestimating the threat. He was asked whether who the Russians wanted to win the election, and he answered Trump. Of course, the report was focused on whether Trump engaged in wrongdoing and accepting Russian help. But there seems to be no argument about the fact that there is Russian-led interference and that Russian-led interference is increasingly dangerous. He also said that Americans need to start getting used to the idea that election campaigns will accept foreign help. A lot of people on the left have dismissed this idea, saying that this is just hysteria, Russia-phobia. What do you make of it?
It's a very real concern, and the internet makes possible forms of election interference that would have been difficult, if not impossible, to pull off in earlier eras. Right now, not just the Russian government, but other governments like the Chinese government and the Iranian government are exploring potential means of interfering with our elections. That can include social media operations like the Russians did in 2016. It can include hacking, and it can also include hacking efforts that relate to our voting machines and our voting process. Registration lists, we know that these were probed during the 2016 election, and a lot of our election infrastructure relies on software sold by commercial vendors with a very sketchy security and reliability. And it's entirely reasonable to be concerned about foreign governments or other foreign actors interfering with our elections on an ongoing basis. And unfortunately, the fact that Trump has not been held accountable for his part in it means that there's very little disincentive for campaigns in the future to do exactly what Trump did, or maybe even more.
Mueller said that he was disturbed by Trump's praise of WikiLeaks, which is apparently the source, which has been named as the source, I should say, of a lot of the dirt on Hillary Clinton, the server information, the leaked emails from the Hillary Clinton campaign, which apparently were delivered to the Trump campaign by Russia via WikiLeaks. Or at least that's what the claim is. What about the idea that Trump could be indicted for many of these crimes of obstruction of justice once he left office? It was actually, I believe, a Republican congressman, Ken Buck, who asked that question of Mueller, and he said, yes, he could be indicted.
That's theoretically possible, but one problem is that if Trump continues into a second term, will be 8 years in office, and the statute of limitations on many of these crimes is 5 years. And there's a theory floating out there that somehow a court would allow an exception to that if it was the president who had been indicted after leaving the office, that they would excuse this going past the statute of limitations. But there's no legal precedent for that whatsoever. So it is entirely possible that if President Trump is not impeached, if he is allowed to continue in office into a second term, that he could escape all criminal liability. And we've heard from those close to Trump that he is seeking re-election precisely for that purpose.
Right. If he can extend his term, he can escape indictment. Let's talk about what the Republican line of questioning was. On the same date that the Mueller hearings took place, the New York Times thought it would be a good idea to publish an op-ed by the ranking Republican on the Judiciary Committee, Doug Collins, who basically said, you know, it's time to move on from the special counsel report. I thought that was pretty remarkable. What did you make of the Republican line of questioning?
Most of the questions from Republicans in both committees were not serious. They were attempts to bring in other matters that were not part of the Mueller investigation, like asking about why he hadn't investigated Hillary Clinton or the Steele dossier, which really formed only a very small part of what started the Russia investigation.
Or the special counsel's hiring of Peter Strzok, the agent who apparently had a personal vendetta against Trump.
Yeah, and one of the questions was about the extent to which Mueller knew, you know, the lawyers that he hired, who were virtually all career Justice Department lawyers, whether he knew their political leanings. In fact, it would have been illegal for Mueller, as part of a federal hiring decision for career staff, to ask about their personal political preferences. So most of these questions were not serious. They were attempts to score points. I'm not saying that the Democrats didn't also sometimes ask questions to score points, but what stood out about the Republican line of questioning was that virtually all of it was off topic and intended to create sound bites for cable TV.
Media Matters for America, this earlier this week before the hearing, explained that there was a tactic that Fox News had been recommending Republicans use, which is to essentially flood the hearing with these conspiracy theories that you only hear on Fox News. It seems as though it's not just Trump anymore who takes his direction from Fox News hosts, but many in the Republican Party as well.
It is very disturbing, and it's reminiscent of what we know about disinformation in autocracies like Russia, where one of the tactics that we've learned that the Russian government uses is, rather than try to suppress the truth, what they now do is they just flood the media and the airwaves with 10 different theories and conspiracies and hoaxes, so that ordinary people are in a position of not knowing what to believe and not trusting anything. And I think some of that scattershot approach of spreading chaff in the hearings was designed to make ordinary voters throw up their hands and say, well, you know, maybe they're all corrupt, or I don't know what to believe. But it's important that Americans not fall into that trap. If people have the time to read the Mueller report, I highly recommend it. It's very readable. And if you can catch some highlights from Wednesday's hearing, you'll see that Mueller's investigation, which again only focuses on small parts of what President Trump is accused of doing, laid out a very compelling case for obstruction of justice.
Another line of questioning was some implication that Mueller wanted the job of FBI director, and Republicans were questioning him about whether he had applied for the position, or, you know, put his name, if you will, out there for the position, and how that somehow might have colored his approach to the investigation. I mean, he was asked, I understand, during the hearing, and he said no, he did not put his name out for the job.
Even if he had, what that shows is that those questioners are not engaging with his actual findings. They're not saying right. that he misunderstood testimony from one of the witnesses, or that he misapplied one of the legal precedents in interpreting obstruction of justice. They're trying to distract by suggesting that he had some ulterior motive, but what they're not doing is engaging with the actual findings of the investigation.
It seems as though Trump and the Republicans wanted both ways on how they treat this investigation and the report. Either Mueller is sound and his assessment exonerated Trump, which has been one claim, or Mueller is nefarious and his assessment was unfair. You can't have it both ways, right?
Right. Either one or the other. But the reality is that he has his limitations, but he... is known to be a reasonable prosecutor. He did make some mistakes, and in particular, there's a serious one in the first part of the report, which is that he focused on criminal conspiracy with Russia, but that was not actually what his appointment asked him to do. It was designed to ask for coordination, which is a different offense in federal law, and that may have been because he didn't have any experts on his team who were familiar with coordination, because that's part of campaign finance law. So it's not a perfect product by any means, but it lays out a compelling set of facts. And in the first volume, you see how extensive the Trump campaign's contacts were with Russian operatives. And of course, we already knew some of that, like, you know, Trump openly asking Russia to hack and release emails. And then in the second part, you see how he systematically attempted to obstruct investigations into his own conduct and the conduct of those close to him. And he may not have provided quite what the Democratic members were hoping would absolve them of the necessity of making their own decisions, but he's laid out a roadmap for impeachment.
Now, he apparently contradicted himself at different parts of the hearing around the issue of whether he could have recommended indictment if the Office of Legal Counsel assertion wasn't there around a sitting president not being indicted. First, he did say that that Trump was not exonerated around obstruction of justice. And then he said later that he wanted to clarify, we did not make any determination with regard to culpability in any way. It sounds like Mueller is just trying to split hairs or protect himself politically from who knows what. I mean, I don't understand what he has left to lose. He's clearly being maligned by the Republicans and by Trump for playing it fair. He might as well say what he feels.
I think this is an example of the problem of him being too clever by half. If he had just come out and said one way or the other, we think that Trump has committed obstruction of justice, he's met all the elements of it, but because of the Office of Legal Counsel policy, we're not going to take any further action, that would have resolved it. Instead, by taking this we decided not to decide approach, he creates a vacuum. And in Washington, D.C., power abhors a vacuum. And Attorney General Barr stepped into that vacuum very cannily and filled it with the there was no obstruction conclusion that Barr made that Mueller refused to make. And so what we have now is months of this no obstruction narrative. And even when he's probed about it right now, he's not giving a clear answer. And I think that shows that the flaw in his approach and in the excessive reliance on him in the first place as a savior on a white knight on a horse who would save Congress from having to make difficult decisions about whether, for example, detaining children in cages is an impeachable offense.
Mm. Right. I mean, I think you're right. There's been this sort of romanticization of Mueller, where people, have spent so long waiting for the results of his report and only to find that he just towed a very, very specific line and didn't really offer any kind of pathway. David Axelrod, a former advisor to former President Barack Obama, said, Mr. Mueller, whom I deeply respect, has not publicly testified before Congress in at least 6 years. He wrote this on Twitter, and he does not appear as sharp as he was then. There were a couple of times when Mueller appeared really to be fumbling, to be not understanding the question. When the question was asked of him very clearly, he asked for it to be repeated and just seemed like he didn't understand the question. I mean, of course, it's a huge amount of pressure on a single person, and this hearing has been building up. It was supposed to be last week. It got pushed by a week, and he was made it so clear he just didn't want to do it. I suppose he's just only human.
Yeah, and he made it clear that he didn't want to testify in the first place, and that his testimony would be the report itself. And every time people tried to ask him questions that went beyond, does it say on page 32 the following? He tried to deflect the question and not answer it. So in that sense, his testimony did not reveal any new earth-shattering moments that people who've read the report are not familiar with. I think for some people who haven't read the report, it may have been really helpful to hear, though, that, for example, Chairman Nadler's questions right up front asked, did your report exonerate Trump of obstruction of justice? And he said no. And that may be the first time some people are hearing that if they've been watching some of the cable news programs that just say that the president was exonerated by the report. They may not have heard that before. So it undoubtedly had some value, but I think what is important to do now is to stop placing all of this weight on the Mueller report as the basis for asking the question of whether the president should be impeached. And I want to call attention to the NAACP,
Yeah.
which just a few days ago voted unanimously to call for impeachment of President Trump, not based on obstruction of justice, not based on coordination with Russian government operatives, but because of some of his abuses of office to promote policies that undermine the equal protection of the laws and have a racial motivation and are designed for purposes of sowing hostility and discord within the American public. That's a different type of impeachable offense that's not in the Mueller investigation, and that's the type of thing we should be talking about.
Right. There seems to be the split within the Democratic Party about what is needed to impeach Trump. On the one hand, you seem to hear enough evidence that most Democrats think he deserves impeachment. On the other hand, some are quite willing to say, well, let's impeach him right away. And others, like Pelosi, like my representative Judy Chu, who I wrote to about her vote against the Al Green resolution on impeachment last week, that it's important, critical, she wrote, that a majority of the American public support impeachment. And so all of these congressional hearings are their way to build support for it. This just sounds like a very long, drawn out, muddled process. Do you think it's a huge mistake for Democrats to wait for the American public to support impeachment in large enough numbers? And I understand something like 20% already do. So I don't know what they're waiting for, 30, 40, 50%?
I do think it's a mistake, and it's not supported by history. If you look at the Nixon impeachment process, when the Judiciary Committee started its impeachment inquiry about Richard Nixon, the public polling about impeachment was actually lower. There were lower percentages of people supporting impeaching Nixon than support impeaching Trump right now. It took time. Over the course of the months of those proceedings of the impeachment inquiry, that's what built the public support.
Right. You can start impeachment and use that as your way to build up public support instead of all this other groundwork with these congressional hearings.
And impeachment can include hearings. That's what it should. But what Pelosi is doing in particular, by constantly denigrating impeachment and saying it's a bad idea, that suppresses public support. So to some extent, the public will follow what they're hearing. And if the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the leader of the Democratic Party and all the senior leadership there are poo-pooing impeachment, then you can't expect that the support for impeachment is just going to naturally rise past 50% all on its own.
Well, Ron, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I always appreciate having you on.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, Sim.
My guest has been Ron Fine. He is the legal director of Free Speech for People and a constitutional lawyer. He co-wrote the book with Ben Clements and John Bonifaz, The Constitution Demands That the Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Do subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.